Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
I'll be reading from the Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 11, Chapter 17, Text 48. Vaishavritya tu rajanyo jivan mrigayaya pari chadedva vritprarupena nasva vritya katam chana vaisha of the mercantile class, vritya, by the occupation,
to indeed.
Rajanya, a king, jivet, may maintain himself, mrighayaya, by hunting, apadi, in an emergency or disastrous situation. Charet, may act. Va, or. Vipra rupena, in the form of a brahmana. Na, never. Sva, of the dog. Vritya, by the profession. Katanchana, in any circumstance. Translation. A king or other member of the royal order who cannot maintain himself by his normal occupation may act as a vaisha, may live by hunting, or may act as a brahmana by teaching others Vedic knowledge. But he may not, under any circumstances, adopt the profession of a sudra. There's no purport to the next few verses, so I'll just continue. The text for text 49 is, a vaisha or a mercantile man who cannot maintain himself may adopt the occupation of a sudra. And a sudra who cannot find a master can engage in simple activities like making baskets and mats of straw. However, all members of society who have adopted inferior occupations in emergency situations may give up those substitute occupations when the difficulties have passed. And the next verse, text 50. One in the Grihastha order of life should daily worship the sages by Vedic study, the forefathers by offering the mantra Swadha, the demigods by chanting Swaha, all the living entities by offering shares of one's meals, and the human beings by offering grains and waters. Thus, considering the demigods, sages, forefathers, living entities, and human beings to be manifestations of my potency, one should daily perform these five sacrifices. Purport by the disciples of Srila Prabhupada. The Lord again discusses the duties of those in the householder order of life. Obviously, the five ritualistic daily sacrifices mentioned here are meant for those who are not pure devotees of the Lord, and those who have to counteract the exploitation of material nature by the above-mentioned sacrifices. The International Society for Krishna Consciousness, ISKCON, is training householders, sannyasis, brahmacharis, and vanaprasthas to engage 24 hours a day in the loving service of the Lord. Those who are full-time missionary workers in ISKCON have no further obligation or sacrifices to perform, as confirmed in the 11th canto of Srimad Bhagavatam. Devarishi bhutapta niram pitanam na kinkaro nayam ritne cha rajan svarvatma ya saranam sarajam gato mukundam parihitya kartam. Anyone who has taken shelter at the lotus feet of Mukunda, the giver of liberation, giving up all kinds of obligations, has taken shelter to the path in all seriousness, owes neither duty nor obligation to the demigods, sages, general living entities, family members, mankind, or the forefathers. Omagyana timiranda shyaganan janashalakya chakshuram militam yena tasma shri guruve namaha Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Hridayananda Goswami Iti Namine. Nama Om Vishnu Padaya Krishna Prasthaya Bhutale Shrimati Bhaktivedanta Swami Iti Namine. Namaste Saraswati Devam Gauravani Pacharine. Nevisesha Shunivari Pashacha Deshatarine. Shri Krishna Chaitana Prabhu Nityananda. Advaita Gadadhar Shivasri Gaura Bhaktivinda. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. So I always get the Grihastha verses. Interesting. So the devotees, the lessons that we can learn from this purport is that devotees, in a sense, we're all obligated to be full-time missionaries within ISKCON. There's no such thing really as a part-time devotee, is there? Once we've accepted the initiation of the spiritual master, that means that's our family occupation. That's our full-time occupation. And all these other things that we may do as IT experts and car salesmen and nurses and so on and so forth, they're just temporary emergency situations, as it's pointed out here. Our duty as Vaishnavas, as devotees, because here it says that pure devotees of the Lord don't come under this rule of having to please the forefathers and so on and so forth. That's very true. Once we come under the protection of the spiritual master and of Krishna, we don't have this obligation anymore. Some people sometimes criticize us. Why don't we perform different ritualistic services? Especially our Hindu friends ask us, why aren't you not doing this and this? It's not incumbent upon us to do these different ritualistic performances. They happen automatically because we're 100% dedicated to the service of the Lord. We are, in effect, when we join the Krishna consciousness movement, taking on the mantle of pure devotional service. So although we may not have achieved pure devotional service as yet, we are still acting as if we are pure devotees. We're working under the auspices of the Supreme Personality of Godhead and the Guru, who's giving us that opportunity to serve in that way. So the demigods are pleased automatically when they see that we're worshipping Krishna and serving Krishna. They're pleased. The forefathers are pleased because they know that by becoming a devotee of Krishna, we are alleviating their suffering. So many generations are immediately liberated when we attain to pure devotional service. And it's, what is it they say? Something like 10,000 generations before and 10,000 generations after our life, we have that opportunity of helping out those personalities. Sometimes we're criticized for that, especially Western devotees when they take up the Krishna consciousness. Why aren't you looking after your old mother? Why aren't you, you know, coming around every day cleaning your mother's house, or when our parents become elderly? The greatest thing that you're doing for your relatives is actually being a devotee. They'll realize that when they actually pass away. So a devotee doesn't have to do a specific service for the sages. Again, the sages, being devotees of the Lord, are very pleased by a devotee doing devotional service. No need to do anything special for the other living entities of this world. I mean, we can just see the pigeons out the back here. We don't have to make any extraneous endeavours to feed other living entities. They're just eating all the remnants of prasadam that are left. And other human beings. Naturally, as a compassionate person, as a devotee, you become very, very compassionate. You automatically want to help other people in society. It's just a natural consequence. And you want to give them the greatest welfare. And that is love of God. So the devotees don't come under these strictures here. Because also, as a devotee, we don't exploit the material nature. Devotees don't need to counteract, but devotees still have to act properly. They have to act properly. Now, in the early days, this understanding that a devotee can do anything and there's no ramifications because we're all doing service for the Lord, was taken in a very neophyte sort of way, and unfortunately it caused a lot of fracas within the community. We had one Rath Yatra festival and we were short on flowers, so the devotees said, well, everything belongs to Krishna, we'll just go down to a flower farm and collect the flowers that we need for the Rath Yatra cart. And unfortunately the owner of the flower farm didn't agree with his philosophy, and he couldn't see the merit of his flowers going to decorate Lord Jagannath's Rath car. And so he got very upset with the devotees, and consequently, you know, the devotees said, well, what's the matter? It's all agyata sukriti, and, you know. But that doesn't work that way. Devotees still have to act properly. Also, in the past, we were known for our dubious ways of collecting money. Again, it was this understanding, well, the devotee can do anything. It's all service to the Lord. We can actually be pretty sly. We'll somehow or other engage the fallen conditioned souls in some sort of, again, agyata sukriti, engage them in some pious activity by ripping them off, by shortchanging people when they were giving a donation for a book and all this kind of thing. This is not acting properly. Devotees don't act like that anymore. We've learned our lesson from that, because we understand that there's reactions for all these things. Reactions will come again, you know. So nowadays we don't do that. We have to act honourably. And the key word here in this section is we have to act like pure devotees. Now, if we're not a pure devotee, we have to act as if understanding, if Prabhupada was in this situation, how would he act? Can you imagine Prabhupada going around pinching flowers, stealing flowers, or ripping people off? There's no way that we can see that. So we have to always have this consciousness of understanding, how would Prabhupada act like that? If we're not pure ourselves and we don't see that, there has to be a moral attitude, a very precise moral attitude. The devotees of the Lord have to be the most pristine community members, the most honest, the most dedicated, the most compassionate. And the other point is that when we take to this path of Krishna consciousness, as it's pointed out here, we have to take to this path in all seriousness. We actually have to be really serious about it. That's why I mentioned that when we become devotees within ISKCON, there's no such thing as a part-time devotee. You can be a lapsed devotee, and you can perhaps put off your devotional service, but really it means if you are following 100% the instructions of your spiritual master and Krishna, that means you are full-time in all seriousness. You have to be serious about devotional service. The material world, as is pointed out in many, many places, is a very dangerous place. Very dangerous place. But it can be a transcendental playground for a missionary devotee, for a devotee that has a missionary zeal. A missionary zeal means we have enthusiasm to pass on the instructions of our spiritual master, to pass on this knowledge for Krishna. Just as Prabhupada had this enthusiasm to serve his spiritual master. It was dormant for a long period of time while he was engaged in family life, but in his heart that enthusiasm was there and it was just waiting to be brought out. The nectar for a devotee is this preaching, is this missionary zeal, and to see the results of this effort that we put into our preaching. It's a wonderful thing. And yeah, you may say that this material world is a place of suffering. That's a fact. There's no two ways about that. But when we have that missionary zeal, when we have that direction in life, it becomes an actual transcendental playground. We start playing with the material energy because we're preaching. And a classic example of that I'll give to you, which is, and we all experience these things when we do preaching, when we're out there presenting the philosophy in one way or another. You know how I've been involved with the interfaith sort of thing, and I hate to bring this up every time I give a class, but it's my life. That's my goal. That's my mission. So sometimes there's some really nectarian things that happen. Like, say, for example, I told you the last time we were doing this preaching program at the cathedral, St. Paul's Cathedral, for Black Saturday, for the victims of the fire. An amazing thing happened. When we went to do that program, I got introduced to a lot of different influential people. And one of those people was the Archbishop of the St. Paul's Cathedral. Now, he was very cordial at the time at this particular function, and he said, "So you're a representative of the Hare Krishna movement and the Hindu community?" "Yes, sir." "Very nice to meet you." "Yes, I'm Archbishop Philip Ferrier." "You know, thank you. I'm Bhaktadas from the Hare Krishna movement." It was very formal. Anyway, what happened was, this week we had another engagement. It was an open house interfaith program, and the Cardinal was asked to speak at this function. And being part of the Port Phillip interfaith group, I was asked to come and participate as well. I was just in the audience. I was just sitting at the back there, and we were just watching the goings on. Anyway, the Archbishop came in, and I was just sitting there. I wasn't minding my own business, and I was thinking, well, you know, yeah, I met him some Saturdays ago, but he's not going to recognise me, and he's, you know, it's just, he came straight up to me. He said, "Oh, Bhakta, how are you?" And shook my hand. I said, "Oh, how are you, Your Grace? You know, nice to see you, you know." Anyway, at this interval, you know, I thought, well, that was really nice of him. He sort of recognised me. That's really interesting, you know. I'm really pleased with that. And then at interval, they had like an intermission break where we have a cup of tea and some cookies and all this kind of stuff. And so anyway, I'm there with my glass of water, and I just thought, I'll just mill in with the rest of the people. The Archbishop came straight from the stage and came straight up. "Bhaktadas, there's a few questions I want to ask you, and I was so pleased that you came to the Saturday bushfire service. It was just very nice that ISKCON was represented." He said, I see your members out there on Swanson Street so often distributing books and handing out flyers. How is the restaurant going anyway?" You know, and he was asking about Gopals and Crossways and all this kind of thing. And I said, "Your Grace, have you ever been to our temple?" "No, no, no, I haven't been." And I said, "How would you like it if I give you a personal invitation that we make arrangements for you to come so you can actually see our temple?" And he said, "I would love that very much. Thank you so much, Bhakta." It's like, you know, all of a sudden it wasn't anymore Your Grace, it was Bhakta and Philip. It was like a personal relationship. He's a really nice guy, and in his heart he wants to develop his devotional service, because he could see the enthusiasm, he could see the missionary zeal, the vibrancy of the devotees, even from his office window, which tells us that we never know who's watching when we're distributing books, when we're distributing prasadam, when we're handing out flyers. We never know who's watching and who's impressed by the way we act. We have to act honourably. We have to act as the best representatives of the community and the best representatives of ISKCON. Not yet, Prabhu, if you... So anyway, there was, you know, like, this was just an amazing event. And I heard on the radio this week about how in the war in Afghanistan, they've recently captured one of the top mullahs, or top organisers in Pakistan. And I was thinking, actually, this is just like us. You know, this guy's friendship, winning over this person's friendship, to me was like a big victory like that. It's so uplifting, so fantastic that you actually have that opportunity. I know that Indradumna Maharaj was absolutely thrilled to bits to have put a garland on the Dalai Lama. He was asking me beforehand, "Buck, do you think we should do this?" I said, "Yeah, Maharaj, go for it." He has that missionary zeal. And afterwards, you know, he said, "Yes, I had a conversation." He was excited like a little kid, you know. It was, "Yeah, I had a conversation with the Dalai Lama and we gave him a garland." What did we do? We simply gave the mercy to these personalities. And Prabhupada said always, somehow or other, if we can get the leaders of the world to be enthusiastic about Krishna consciousness, then we're making headway. So this was really, really an amazing thing. So that's the joy. That's the buzz. That's, you know, people may say, yes, the material world is a mundane, horrible place full of suffering, but the devotee just picks out nectar everywhere. It's really, really amazing. So yesterday it was said that actually in this day and age, actually, we're all sudras. You know, Janmate Jayate Sudra. We're all dictated to by a particular master. And that's true. But as devotees, our master is Krishna, and we allow him and the spiritual master, we allow them to push us whichever way we want. We have to remain fixed at the lotus feet of Guru. The material world is a horrible place, but one of the ways to counteract this horrible situation that we're in, this material world that we're in, is to have a goal in life, a devotional goal in life. Each one of us has a particular mission that Krishna has put us on this planet for. We have to research what our mission is. It can be given some direction by the spiritual master. It can be given some direction from Chaita Guru within. But we have to find what our mission is. How can we serve the Lord in the best capacity? Yes, it's a suffering, place of suffering, we know that. I was listening to a class by Radhanath Swami yesterday. A really amazing personality. And he was saying, yeah, this is a horrible place. He said, just see, when a baby is born, first thing that a baby does is cry. There is no baby born on this planet that comes out laughing. Because this material world is not a laughing situation. It's a very serious thing. All of a sudden, this little newborn baby comes out. He knows no one. He's total ignorance of what's going on. And he screams. What the hell is going on? And then we have to somehow or other connect with people around us. So this darkness of ignorance. That's the same. This material world is just a web of darkness, a phantasmagoria, and it's a dangerous place. So for the general population, they live in ignorance, but a devotee has revealed the truth of this material world. By the mercy of Guru and Shastra, we can actually see what this material world is all about. He can be relieved of the suffering. He can be relieved of the negative side of material nature, and he can give relief. And this giving of relief is being this missionary zeal. Now, when we think of missionaries, we think of people going off, Christians, for us anyway, for the Western person, going off to these far off remote places and trying to convert people. That's not a missionary. A missionary is one who has a vision in connection with the Supreme and lives that life to the best that that person can and acts as an example for the rest of the community. That's a missionary, and then thinks of unique ways to engage people in devotional service. Prabhupada was the exceptional missionary. He came in and he was just giving all the time. And he said, I didn't come to convert people, I just wanted to give people love of God. And this is the trick to remain ever fresh in devotional service. Because what we have is, when we come to Krishna consciousness, we have what's called the conversion experience. You heard of the conversion experience? Conversion experience is when all of a sudden the lights go on and you think, wow, this is the life for me. You remember when it happened to you in Krishna consciousness. Somebody told you about Krishna, you got a book or something, and you, for a while there, you were flicking through it. I remember, this is a horrible thing, but I used to read the BTG on the toilet. Can you believe that? And I thought, wow, this is pretty far out. This is really good, sitting on a toilet. So we come in different ways, you know, that we come to, then all of a sudden it dawns on us, after hearing a certain amount of lectures or meeting a particular spiritual master or something, hi, how are you? All of a sudden we snap. This is the life I want to live. I want to be Hare Krishna. And you shave up and you become enthusiastic. And this is called the conversion experience. Happens to all of us. And you're very euphoric. You're fully fired up. Yeah, we're going to take over the world. It's so great. I'm going to be a great devotee. It won't take us long before I'm a pure devotee. From what I read in the Shastra, yeah, maybe 5 or 6 years and then I'll be a pure devotee. I'm going back home, back to Godhead. We're going to do so much preaching. We're getting out there. You know, we're really enthusiastic. And, you know, we go back to our parents and say, you're all dog hogs, camels and asses. You should all... and your parents are sort of looking at you going, what is wrong with this guy, you know? And you know, it's a very euphoric, a very fired up sort of situation. But all of a sudden, after 2 years, it wanes. Think, hang on a tick. Let's take it easy a bit here. And that's when it really starts to hit home. Now, these euphoric situations, these conversion experiences happen in political parties, it happens in different groups and clubs. Somebody all of a sudden becomes an ecstatic fan of a particular football club and is really... In Krishna consciousness, similarly, we have this conversion experience. But it happens after a couple of years, sort of tapers off a bit. The enthusiasm sort of wears down. Now, the trick to remain enthusiastic, to remain on top of material life, is to have this missionary zeal. to have this goal in life, to have an understanding, how can I best serve Guru and Krishna? What can I do to serve Guru and Krishna? And then we have to really, really define what our goal is. What am I good at? What can I do? What am I not so good at? You know, dealing with people, is that what I'm good at? Can I help people? Can I manage people? Am I a good book distributor? Have I got it down to teach Bhakti Shastri classes? Can I give Bhagavatam class? Can I do this or that? You have to figure out. But you have to remain enthused, and you have to keep this understanding of what is my goal in life. We have to have a goal. You know, when you hear these motivational speakers, they're always emphasizing how important it is that you wake up in the morning and you know you have a goal in life. Now, okay, as devotees, our goal in life is to chant 16 rounds, follow the regulative principles, to serve our spiritual master, to come and do deity worship and all that. That's there. That's our sadhana. That has to be there. That's the process for purification. But alongside that, there has to be a goal. What can I do to help Srila Prabhupada in his mission to save every single conditioned soul on this planet? What can I do? How can I be involved? So we have to become extremely passionate about our goal. And not passionate in a material sense, not that we become completely fanatics, but passionate in a spiritual sense. We have to become really absorbed in what we're doing. And when we have that, then we become actually very, very enthused, and it keeps us motivated in our Krishna consciousness. We know what we want to do. We want to serve the Master in all seriousness. This activity of devotional service has to be rationally worth it. We have to analyze, is this worth it? Because what we've done is we've come from a materialistic situation and we've converted, we've changed ourselves. We're in a healing situation. If we are struck with an illness, and the material condition is like an illness, if we're struck with an illness, we do anything to try and heal ourselves. If you get the notice that, you know, you go to the doctor and the doctor says, oh, Bhaktadasa, listen, I hate to tell you, but you've got cancer and you've got a certain amount of time to live. As a materialist, you would do anything to rectify that situation. Change my diet, stop this, stop that, you'll do it. So as in the same way, the spiritual master is coming and saying, you're stuck in this material disease, this material contamination. This is a disease, actually. It's a drug. Material life is like a drug, it's an addiction. And after the initial euphoria of this conversion experience, that drug of the attachment to material life can creep back in. Wasn't so bad out there. You know, I did have an opportunity to enjoy some things, and so on and so forth. So we have to check that addiction to material life. We have to check that illness. And we have to make sure that we don't go down this path again. And the way you do that is by becoming very, very, very much enthusiastic about the goals of life. The goal of life, the ultimate goal of life, is to find out who we really are, which is said here. We have to find out who we are, what our relationship is with the Supreme, what our relationship is with Mukunda, you know, the giver of liberation. This is a journey. We have to struggle every day. It becomes a point. So when we wake up in the morning, what's our goal? What's our struggle? Where are we going to? You know, there is, to defeat that addiction to material sense gratification, we have to make a concerted effort. It doesn't happen by itself. We actually have to achieve something. Now, the big thing in the material world at the moment is people losing weight. You know? And if you've ever seen any of these Biggest Losers and all this kind of shows on TV, these people have to suffer so much to lose a few kilos. They've got these grossly overweight people and they pound them. They run them around, they push them, they have to lift this, they have to push that, just to lose a few pounds, you know. And Prabhupada used to say also, and as a devotee, in the same sense, we are so conditionally obese, so conditioned to material life, we have to lose that attachment to material life. And we also have to pound it, we have to get out there, we have to really make an effort. We have to be full-time engaged missionary devotees of ISKCON. Prabhupada used to emphatically say that to his disciples when he was teaching. He said, a devotee has to be as serious as a university student studying to attain the master's or a degree. We can't be whimsical. He said you have to study these books like a really dedicated student. Really have to intensely study these books, research it, find out the truth behind it, develop it, just like a university student studying for a degree. Similarly, Prabhupada used to give the analogy of a soldier. A devotee is like a soldier. He is the frontline soldier presenting the philosophy. And to be a soldier, what does a soldier have to do? They have to get up early, they have to have training, they have to have experience, they have to go out in the field. So a devotee is like a soldier as well. And we have to struggle. So Prabhupada makes those points. Either way, life is a struggle, whether it's as a materialist or as a spiritualist, it's a struggle. But for the devotees, that struggle is actually really nectarian when the goals are achieved. So there's one verse that I wanted to read out of the Srimad Bhagavad Gita, and it's from the 15th chapter. And I know you know it. Maivamsa jiva loke, jiva bhuta sanatana, mahashasandriya prakriti stanikashati. This verse, when I read this the first time, it was so inspiring because it sets a goal for the devotees. If I can read the purport to this and the translation. The living entity in this conditioned world are my eternal fragmental parts. Due to conditioned life, they're struggling very hard with the six senses, which includes the mind. Now, this purport by Prabhupada, it's a little long, but it's actually very nectarian, and it's sort of the thing that you can sort of really pin a goal on. In this verse, the identity of the living entity is very clearly given. The living entity is a fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, eternally. It is not that he assumes individuality in his conditioned life and his liberated state becomes one with the Lord. He is eternally fragmented. It is clearly said, Sanatana. According to the Vedic version, the Supreme Lord manifests and expands himself in innumerable expansions, of which the primary expansions are called Vishnu Tattva, and the secondary expansions are called living entities. In other words, the Vishnu Tattva is the personal expansion, and the living entities are separated expansions. By his personal expansion, he is manifested in various forms, like Lord Rama, Nrisimha, Vishnumurti, and all the predominant deities in the Vaikuntha planets. The separated expansions, the living entities, are eternally servitors. The personal expansion of the Supreme Lord, the Personality of Godhead, the individual identifies, the individual identities of Godhead are always present. Similarly, the separate expansions of the living entities have their identities. As fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, the living entities have also fragmental qualities, of which independence is one. Every living entity has an individual soul, his personal individuality, and a minute form of independence. But misuse of that independence, one becomes conditioned soul. And by proper use of independence, he will always be liberated. In either case, he is qualitatively eternal, as the Supreme Lord is. In his liberated state, he is freed from material condition, and he is under the engagement of transcendental service unto the Lord. In his conditioned life, he is dominated by material modes of nature, and he forgets the transcendental loving service of the Lord. As a result, he has to struggle very hard to maintain his existence in this material world. And hence, we have these duties that we have to perform. The living entities, not only the human beings and the cats and dogs and even the greater controllers of the material world, Brahma, Lord Shiva and Lord Vishnu, are all part and parcel of the Supreme Lord. They are all eternal, not temporary manifestations. The word karshati, struggling or grappling hard, is very significant. The conditioned soul is bound up as though shackled by iron chains. He is bound by the false ego and the mind is the chief agent, which is driving him into this material existence. So this mind constantly is what we have to be on guard with. When the mind is in the mode of goodness, his activities are good. And when the mind is in the mode of passion, his activities are troublesome. And when the mind is in the mode of passion, his activities are troublesome. And when his mind is in ignorance, he travels to lower species of life. It is clear, however, in this verse that the conditioned soul is covered by the material body with the mind and the senses, and when he is liberated, this material covering perishes, but his spiritual body manifests its individual capacity. The following information is there in the Madhya Narayana Shruti. It states here that when a living entity gives up this material embodiment and enters the spiritual world, he revives his spiritual body, and in his spiritual body he can see the personality of Godhead face to face. He can hear and speak to him face to face, and he can understand the Supreme Personality of Godhead as he is. In Smriti also it is understood that in the spiritual planet everyone lives in bodily features like the Supreme Personality of Godhead. As far as bodily construction is concerned, there's no difference between the part and parcel living entity and the expansions of Vishnumurti. In other words, at liberation, the living entity gets a spiritual body by the grace of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. The word Mami Vamsaha, fragmental parts and parcels of the Supreme Lord, is very significant. The fragmental portion of the Supreme Lord is not like materially broken part. We have already understood in the second chapter that the spirit cannot be cut into pieces. This fragment is not materially conceived. It is not like matter which can be cut into pieces and joined together again. That conception is not applicable here because the Sanskrit word sanatana, internal, is used. The fragmental portion is smin yata, in each and every individual body. The fragmental portion of the Supreme is present. The fragmental portion, when liberated from the bodily entanglement, revives its original spiritual body in the spiritual sky, in the spiritual planet, and enjoys association with the Supreme Lord. It is, however, understood here that the living entity, being the fragmental part and parcel of the Supreme Lord, is qualitatively one, and just as the parts and parcels of goal are also goal. So we have to really research what our goal is. When I read that when I was a younger devotee, it made such an impact on me of who we really are. So we have to start to fight more and more for this realization and search more and more. The result of it is that there becomes different ecstasies within devotional service. The last part that I wanted to finish up with is the last chapter of Bhagavad Gita, and I just want to read the translations and just let you hear what Krishna says, just to remind us again what Krishna says about what our goals of life should be. Those engaged in all kinds of activities, my devotees, under my protection, reaches the eternal, imperishable abode by my grace. So our goal is ultimately to reach Krishna, to go back home, back to Godhead. In all activities, just depend upon me and work always under my protection. So we can understand we don't have to perform these different rituals. Krishna gives protection. In such devotional service, be fully conscious of me. So it's incumbent upon us when we're researching who we are to see Krishna everywhere. We can't be dull-headed. We have to keep looking for Krishna everywhere. Whatever we're doing, in whatever occupation, whatever life journey we take, we have to look for Krishna everywhere. If you become conscious of me, you will pass over the obstacles of conditional life by my grace. You can overcome all the struggles of material life by Krishna's grace. If, however, you do not work in such a consciousness, but act through false ego, not hearing me, you will be lost. So consequently, you'll be struggling lifetime after lifetime. Krishna then says, if you do not act according to my directions and do not fight, it's a fight. If you do not fight, then you will be falsely directed. You'll slip back down to that addiction of material life. By your nature, you'll have to be engaged in warfare, have to do your duty. Under illusion, you are now declining to act according to my direction. But compelled by your own nature, you will act all the same, O son of Kunti. The Supreme Lord is situated in everyone's heart, O Arjuna, and is directing the wanderings of all living entities who are seated on a machine made of material energy. O son of Bharat, surrender unto him utterly. By his grace, you will attain transcendental peace and the supreme eternal abode. Thus I've explained to you the most confidential of all knowledge. Deliberate on this fully, analyze it, study it, and then do as you wish to do. So the Lord leaves it up to us. Take the challenge. Because you are my very dear friend, I am speaking to you the most confidential part of knowledge. Hear this from me, for it is in your benefit. Always think of me. become my devotee, worship me, offer homage unto me, thus you will come to me without fail. I promise you this because you are my very dear friend. Abandon all varieties of religion, just surrender to me, and I shall deliver you from all sinful reactions. Do not fear. So Krishna is saying, don't worry about all these obligations, these rituals. I'll protect you. It's fine. And then the final one is, the confidential knowledge may not be explained to those who are not austere or devoted or engaged in devotional service, nor to one who is envious of me. So we have to see that being a devotee of the Lord is a very, very opportune position. For one who explains this supreme secret to the devotees, devotional service is guaranteed, and at the end he will come back to me. So as it was pointed out in the previous verse that I read, Krishna will actually be a personal friend to you. We'll actually meet him. There is no servant in this world more dear to me than he, nor will there ever be one more dear. For one who preaches Bhagavad Gita, for one who has a missionary zeal, for one who goes out and helps people to realize their true position. So this is what is incumbent upon us, this missionary zeal. And one who listens with faith without envy becomes free from sinful reactions and attains to the planets where the pious dwell. O conqueror of wealth, Arjuna, you have heard this attentively with your mind, and your illusions and ignorance has now been dispelled. So Krishna is saying here that we have to fix our mind on him and have a goal in life, and that goal of life is a missionary zeal to please him and to present God consciousness to whoever we come in contact with. And each one of us has an individual, direct responsibility and mission in life, and you're guaranteed, as you will find out, that the highest taste comes to you very, very quickly in this preaching engagement. It's just a wonderful thing, and that will keep the attachment or the disease of material condition at bay. So I'll stop here and ask if there's any comments or questions at all, Prabhu. Yes, Prabhu?
Coming back to your comments about because we are devotees and working in an emergency situation, it's not our natural situation. So, you're talking about the emergency situations here.
Yeah.
So, if I take my example, I try to follow the regular principles and the instructions of my spiritual master,
yep,
to the best of my ability.
Yep.
Then I have to work as well.
Yeah.
So do you think this is an emergency situation?
It's a perfect situation. That's a fine position. You're responsibly looking after your family. You're responsibly bringing Krishna consciousness to your children. And at this particular point of time, this is what you can do. If you can do a little extra, you help with the different programs here at the temple, that's fine. In your heart, you may have some other thing that eventually you would like to do. Perhaps write a book. Perhaps serve your spiritual master in a particular way by offering something to him. Or perhaps setting up a center for yourself. Or preaching in a particular demographic. Whatever. That may not be applicable at this particular point of time. But if you have it in your heart for something to do, that's maintaining a goal in life. You have to have something beyond just your sadhana as well. Does that make sense? But at this point of time, you have to be the business person. You have to make money. Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. I'm not a business person. I'm a shudra according to the definition.
We all are. We're lower than shudra. In this age, we're all. You know, like the class that was given yesterday. It was like, you know, we're all, you know, even you get a university degree or whatever, you're still answerable to a master. We as devotees say we prefer the best master, and that's the supreme and our spiritual master, the supreme lord and the spiritual master. So yeah, we have to do our work, and we have to, but it's like play acting. You know, a devotee has to go through the motions of particular doing a particular job and being very proficient at that job. It's not that we're lax at that job. If we're studying, we're the best student. If we're in a particular business situation, we're the best in that. You know, it's best to our capacity. But in our heart, we're always thinking, what else can I do for the Lord? Please give me a direction. How can I serve you even better? What is that thing that you want me to do personally for you? Does that make sense?
Yes.
You have to somehow or other, if you're not sure what Krishna specifically has in mind for you as your mission, your personal relationship to the Supreme, then you ask him and it'll become revealed to you in due course of time. Just as when Prabhupada met Bhaktisiddhanta Maharaj said to him, I want you to preach in the West. I want you to write everything in English. And so Srila Prabhupada had that in his mind for a long, long time until he was 70, and then he could act on it in full. So it may be some time, you know. But if you have that in your heart, you know, what can I do if you have a desire? And there's nothing wrong with that. That's great. Krishna has a specific mission for each and every one of us. Is that okay? Any other comments or questions? Yes, Prabhu. Yeah, Prabhu. Exactly. Absolutely. Floating. Yes. Absolutely correct. You need that because this addiction to material life, even in devotional service, will tend to let us cruise. The natural propensity for a human being is that they're lazy. Now, we're lower than sudra, and one of the qualities of a sudra is that they're lazy. They have to be pushed. Isn't that? Is that what we get across? But we're lower than that. So we'll do anything to sort of, we'll just cruise. You know? Nobody sees me, I'll take rest this afternoon. Yeah, that's okay. And that's okay. Sometimes we need rest. That's fine. It's just an example. But we shouldn't allow lethargy to come into our devotional or complacency to come into our devotional service. We have to maintain enthusiasm. We have to. We have to spark up our... You know, and we have to do things out of the ordinary, above and beyond our sadhana, to actually give us that crispness of life. And when you have that, then it all becomes relevant to you. It all becomes more alive to you. You know, when I had that relationship with the Archbishop, or I had that opportunity to preach in this and that way, I had an opportunity to distribute a book, you come back to the temple and you see the deities and you look at Krishna and you say, I gotcha, I did it, you know what I mean? And you can see it from Radharani's face, from Gaurinitai's face, from Krishna's face. They're saying, good boy, keep it up. And then your spiritual master sees you, or you do arti to Srila Prabhupada and you offer a flower. You feel Prabhupada rubbing you on your back saying, good boy, that a boy. And if you can physically get that from your spiritual master also, wow, that's even better still. You know? If you've done something so nice, so enthusing, you know, that Devamrita Swami comes up and says, good girl, that was good preaching. Yeah, you're elevated. I'm going to do more of that. I'm going to get me some more of that. You know, you want more of it. That's what gives us the juice in spiritual life. That's the taste for which we're hankering, preaching. Because Krishna says, you know, that pleases me the most who can pass this knowledge on. Prabhu, did you have a question?
Thank you for a very inspiring lecture. I was saying, everybody talking.
Absolutely. One thing that I wanted to mention while I have you all here, you know how I do this interfaith work, and it's really interesting to actually communicate with the different religious groups and so on and so forth. There are now interfaith groups springing up all over the metropolitan area. There's some in the western suburbs, some in the northern suburbs. There are these interfaith groups happening all over. One of my goals and one of my enthusiastic endeavours is that we somehow or other get other devotees interested who would like to be part of interfaith groups in their particular region. Instead of me going to all the different ones, oh God, here comes that tall Hare Krishna again, you know, and I'm at the Monash one, I'm at the Dandenong one, and I'm at this one, that somebody else works with me, ladies and men, to be an interfaith representative. You'll get a real thrill from it. And I'm opening it up to you, and I'm going to be putting a notice up that anybody that is interested, and Bhakti and I are going to be travelling for our holidays up the East Coast to actually promote interfaith work. The devotees now have to move into the communities. We have to move. We don't compromise. We are Hare Krishnas. but we have to move into the communities and present this philosophy in a different way as well, interacting with other members of the community and especially other religious organisations. So if anybody is interested in doing work like that, that they feel in their heart, hey, that might be something that is a good goal to set for myself, I'd be really happy to hear from you, if that's okay. All right, Prabhu, Srila Prabhupada ki.